Mark Largent is Interim Associate Provost for Undergraduate Education and Dean of Undergraduate Studies at Michigan State University. He's also a professor in MSU's prestigious and renowned James Madison College. A primary focus of his is working to improve student success at MSU. Mark, great to have you on the program.
Thank you for the invitation.
So how do you and how does MSU define student success? What does that mean?
Well, student success is the opportunity for a student to develop their purpose and passion in life. And when you come out of high school or maybe after some time between high school and the start of college, there's a notion that university provides an opportunity for a student to explore. And the difference between a university that really focuses on undergraduate student success and one that doesn't is the idea that students aren't left to wander. They are given an opportunity in a structured way to explore their purposes and their passions. And purposes and passions are not things that you discover, like they're laying out on the sidewalk and you trip over them on your on your way into class. They're things that have to be very conscientiously cultivated and provided structured pathways in which a student can explore those things.
And it seems like an obvious question, Mark, but why is it important to improve student learning and success, which you say go hand in hand?
They do. And we often talk about undergraduate student learning and success goals. They are well aligned. We aren't really interested in a situation in which a student shows up here, pays us money, and we hand them a diploma. Really what we want to do is provide a launching pad for people to move into careers or to move into public service or to move into opportunities that allow them to operationalize, allow them to really come to own their lives and their futures. It's important at the individual level, but as a land-grant institution and as a public university, it also means that when you have thousands of students a year coming to MSU and thousands of students graduating every year, you're building a foundation for the state and for the nation and for the world. And we see our responsibility to individuals as part of our broader responsibility to society generally.
So, Mark Largent, what are some of the challenges for students in achieving that success or some of the roadblocks?
Well, students show up here. We talk about them as though they're our kind of uniform students, but we get more than 8,000 students showing up on campus every fall. Every one of them comes from a different place with a different trajectory, different types of preparation, different types of strengths, and different types of goals. And the tremendous heterogeneity of students, which at root is very much a part of our strength, is also a great challenge because we know that some pathways and some opportunities really privilege students who come to us with certain kinds of backgrounds or certain kinds of experiences or strength. And if we're not as equally generous in the range of opportunities and the range of pathways as we are in the range of types of individuals who come to our campus, then we end up with what we call opportunity gaps, which are clusterings of students by some kind of characteristic. It might be where they're from. It might be race and ethnicity or gender. It might be the kinds of preparations that they've had. Their high schools might be particularly strong in some areas and weaker in others. It might be that the individuals have strengths that really help them go through high school very successfully, start college, but those are not strengths that are privileged in an academic setting. And so we want to make sure that we provide very different kinds of avenues for students through an undergraduate degree that challenge them, that help them grow, but that ultimately recognize this very core value for us, which is the belief that every student we admit has the capacity to learn, thrive, and graduate. We're not here to sort them. That's not our job. Sorting took place in the admissions process. Every student we admit has the capacity to graduate. And when we see clusterings of students who fail to return for their sophomore year or their junior year or who take much longer than other groups of students to graduate, then we suspect that we have engineered a college experience that isn't equitable. And so we have to ask ourselves really hard questions about, well, why is it that certain subgroups of students have very different graduation rates than other subgroups of students? They all showed up with the certification that they have the capacity to learn, thrive, and graduate, every single one of them.
Well, Mark, let's talk about some of the ways you and your team is helping to improve that student success at Michigan State University. One is the neighborhoods. What are those?
Well, Michigan State's a large place, one of the largest universities in the country. And so when I talk to parents or I talk to students who are thinking about coming here, they often talk about its large size, and it seems sort of foreboding to them. But the reality of it is that you have very localized communities, and the neighborhoods are a way for us to provide that kind of localized experience and recognize that people build communities, small, cohesive communities in this big place by establishing five neighborhoods among our residential living areas. So we have a great number of residential living halls. Some of them have well over 1,000 students living in them, but they're organized into five neighborhoods. And in each neighborhood are the social, the health, the academic resources for a student to access. So it's not like if a student needs counseling related to a course that they're taking, or perhaps some tutoring or mental health services, that there's some centralized location that they have to trudge off to on the other side of campus. These are all provided locally in their neighborhood, very much the way that neighborhoods exist in large cities.
And what about learning analytics and innovative academic advising?
Well, yeah, it's innovative. One word that's used professionally is intrusive advising. The idea is that you really want to go to students and help them to understand that there are opportunities for support. Many students, for a variety of different reasons, choose not to access support services. And what we want to make sure that we do is we get the students and say, it seems to me like you could use some help here, and not just hang out a shingle and wait for people to show up, but to actually go to the students who the research shows us would benefit from different kinds of support. So that support might be getting them into different course pathways that allow them to experience learning in the kinds of ways that they seem either most able or best prepared to do. But also it means getting to students and saying what you're doing isn't well aligned with what we know successful students do. So it could be paying attention to their when they schedule their own courses, where those courses are located, and to help them understand that that's probably not a very successful pathway, because we know what the streets and sidewalks look like at 10:15 on Tuesday mornings. They're packed. And we know that getting across campus in 20 minutes is probably not
right.
successful. So it's getting to those students and helping them to understand that we have a vested interest in helping them be successful.
And Mark, sort of a two-part question when it comes to tuition. MSU is debuting a flat rate tuition. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that, and then take 15 of them. What is that all about?
Well, so several years ago, we started a campaign called Go Green, Go 15, which came about because in the analysis that we had done of our data, we realized that beginning around 2006, students had started taking fewer and fewer credits every semester. And so we had gone from students in their very first semester at MSU taking 15 or more credits about half the time. About half of the students showed up in that fall and took 15 or more credits. And from 2006 to 2016, that number fell and fell and fell, so that by 2016, only 28% of first semester students were taking 15 or more credits. And that coincided with a general slowing across campus of students taking credits. So they were taking a little bit longer to graduate. We were seeing increased student success in some ways because we saw our graduation rates inching up. But we were concerned because the other kinds of analysis that we had done was to look at how many credits students were taking and whether or not those students were being successful in their classes. And what we found is that as students slowed their credit rates, we call it credit momentum, which is the rate at which they're taking credits, as they slowed, they were more likely to drop out. They were more likely to get poorer grades. They were less likely to graduate in 4 years or 5 years or 6 years. And that likelihood held constant across all kinds of categories. So it didn't matter where you came from. That is, what high school you graduated from. It didn't matter if you were a man or a woman. It didn't matter what your race or ethnicity was. It didn't matter what your SAT or ACT scores were. Students with very high test scores, when they slowed down their credit momentum, did worse, which is completely counterintuitive.
Right.
But lots of things are counterintuitive, right? The earth looks flat. It's not because we do analyses that show us quite conclusively that when we step back and we look at it in the broader perspective, we realize it's not. So in many ways, this kind of common sense approach has to be addressed with analyses that show us that taking fewer credits is good for you. So we started that 3 years ago, and we saw a very rapid change in student credit-taking behavior. And that was because we had a concerted effort to really focus on making sure that the classes were available, there were enough seats, they were offered at the right times, and that advisors were well-equipped to address questions about whether or not students should take 13 credits or 14 credits or 15 credits, and also to get to parents, because for incoming students, the parents play a really important role. We also know that peers play a really important role. So it's really making sure everybody's singing from the same songbook. The change was dramatic. We're back up over 50% within 2 years. 50% or more of the students were taking 15 or more credits in their first semester. There's also a dilemma, because we were surveying parents when they brought their students for orientation, and we asked them, how long do you think your students should take to graduate? And the parents were pretty uniform. It should be 4 years. About 80% of them said 4 years, maybe a little bit more, but 4 years is what we really expect. And then we said, how many credits do you think a student should take? And they said, well, 12 to 14. Well, if you do the math, it takes 120 credits to graduate. You need 30 credits a year. Which means that if you don't have to repeat any classes and you always get 15 credits a semester of the right classes that you want and need to graduate, it's going to take you 4 years. But if you take 14, it takes you longer. Take 13. If you take 12, it takes you 5 years. And again, that's if everything else goes perfectly. You pass every class, you get into exactly the classes you want at exactly the right times. So we want students taking 15 or more credits. The problem that we heard often was, well, taking more credits costs more money. And we realized when we looked at all the other our peers in the Big Ten that it was, of all the schools in the Big Ten, only Michigan State and University of Nebraska were using this per credit tuition model, meaning that if you took 12 credits, you paid less than if you took 15 credits, because you're paying for each credit rather than paying for a semester's worth of classes. All the other Big Tens, in fact, most of the public universities in Michigan, all use a flat rate tuition model, which means that if you're a full-time student, regardless of if you're taking 12 credits or 15 credits or even 18 credits, you're paying the same amount of money. So last year, the decision was made by the Board of Trustees that we would move to a flat rate tuition model. It starts in the fall of 2019. In flat rate tuition, a student will pay the exact same amount whether they're taking 12 credits or 15 credits or even up to 18 credits. So now you have a financial incentive for students to work at a little bit faster credit rate, which we know coincides with undergraduate student success. And we've got this nice alignment between the financial incentives and what we know helps students be more successful.
Mark Largent is my guest on MSU Today, the guru of improving student success at Michigan State University. And Mark, there has been some success in student success. Talk about the recent numbers that you've put out.
Yeah, so MSU's Office of Institutional Research is sort of our scorekeeper in all things that we do. They report to the feds. They make they issue public reports for us, and they really provide us a great deal of guidance in keeping track of how many different things are going on. Undergraduate probation rates, for example, especially at the end of first semester, are really important indicators for us of student success. We know that a student who goes on probation at the end of their first semester is far, far more likely to leave MSU before they graduate. In fact, they only have about a 1 in 3 chance of graduating relative to the students who aren't on probation. So that number is really important. And it dropped to a record low number last fall. And we saw improvements across all kinds of demographic categories, men and women, Pell-eligible students, first-generation students. We were really happy to see that, because that's an important canary in the coal mine for us. It tells us we expect will happen in coming semesters. The other number that we're very happy about right now is we, for the first time ever, broke 80% in our six-year graduation rate. So the federal government reports graduation rates at 6 years. They do it at 150% of normal. So an 80% graduation rate, meaning that 8 in 10 of the students who started here as first-time college students successfully completed their degrees within that six-year period. It had never broken 80% before, so we were very, very happy to see that. The students who start at MSU but don't finish, that other 20%, we know a significant number, nearly half of them, go on to college or university at another institution. So they may come to MSU, and we really think about graduation as the gold standard of undergraduate student success. But it's often the case that a student comes here and they develop their purpose or passion and they say, you know what I really want to do is I want to go into aeronautical sciences. Well, we don't have a degree in that. But if we've launched a student so that they understand that purpose and passion and they can go someplace where they can study it, that's wonderful. If they could decide, no, I really want to be closer to home because of I want to be near a loved one or because it makes more financial sense for us. If we helped a student make that decision and they made a concerted decision that I'm going to go do this, then I feel very optimistic about it. The students who I have a great deal of concern about are the ones who come to MSU and we weren't able to provide that foundation for them to discover their purposes and passion. And the rate that that seems to happen is falling quite quickly. We're getting very good at being a place where students come and leave here happy and successful.
And Mark, a couple of points I think we'd like to emphasize when it comes to student success. We're not reducing rigor.
Oh, no.
Just the opposite. This is about reducing opportunity gaps again. You touched on that.
Yeah, so that's sort of the old saw of, well, if these numbers are getting better, it's just because you're lowering standards, you're getting easier. Actually, the exact opposite is what's happening, and probably the best example of that is with what we've done in mathematics reform. MSU leads the nation right now in a very radical reform of developmental math. So when students graduate from high school and they go to college, there's a lot of different measures that universities use to decide if a student is likely to be successful. Standardized test scores, the grades that they've had, the kinds of activities that they've participated in. But you see a lot of variation in that. So a student may be very, very strong in mathematics and sciences, but might not have developed their writing skills as much. We would not say, well, that student can't come to MSU because they don't have uniformly high abilities. We know when students come here, we have a capacity to improve students' abilities. So about 15% of our students come with challenges around mathematics standards. And those students have gone through the pathways in high school taking pre-algebra and algebra, but really struggled with it for one reason or another. And every university in the country tries to support those students with what they call developmental mathematics. And what it essentially is you didn't do well in high school in this class, we'll just have you take it again in college. And you know, Einstein had this great quote about how the height of absurdity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different outcome. Why would a student who struggled with a subject in high school suddenly do better with it in college unless there's some radically different approach taking? And that's exactly what we've done. First thing that we did was say, well, algebra is very important if you need to go on to calculus. And for many undergraduate degree pathways, calculus is a necessary language and skill for students to have, especially if you're going into any of the sciences. But if you want to go into art history, or if you want to become a theater major, or philosophy, or a public policy major, it's entirely likely that calculus is not really a valuable tool for you. In fact, there might be other much more valuable mathematics classes. And so the first thing we did was we created Math 101 and 102, which is a quantitative literacy course. And these are very rigorous courses that help students better understand the ways in which quantification tools are used in order to both understand the world, but also in order to express truths or to make arguments. And a student who's quantitatively literate has a capacity to understand what it means when someone says, well, If you engage in this behavior, you're 43% more likely to die within 10 years. Well, what does that mean exactly? So the quantitative literacy courses have proven to be very successful in helping students build quantitative abilities, which really help them in the major pathways that they choose in ways that calculus just wouldn't be relevant. The other thing that we did is said, well, there are a set of students who want to move into a calculus-based discipline, but they haven't yet experienced the preparation necessary. And so that famous class we used to have was called Math 1825, and it was our developmental mathematics course. You were to take that course, and then once you successfully passed that, you would then take Math 103, which is college algebra. The problem that we found is that much of what was in Math 1825 wasn't actually necessary as a foundation for Math 103. It became a kind of a gatekeeper, not gateway course. And that's very much the norm. And so what we've got are a set of very smart, very innovative, and very energetic colleagues in the mathematics department who took the responsibility to really change both the developmental course pathway, Math 1825, and actually Math 103 itself. And what we've seen in that reform is, first of all, Math 1825 is replaced with Math 103A and Math 103B. It's a two-course sequence. The grading standards for it are considerably higher than they were for 1825. And students are leaving there knowing much more about mathematics and much more capable to move on to higher level mathematics. We've also seen in that course what I'm calling a rising tide and a closing gap. That is, students from who are from subgroups of students who experience larger opportunity gaps. That is, students affiliated with subgroups who have struggled more with that developmental course. They see some of the greatest improvements when we move to this new reformed mathematics pathway, which is interesting because the new courses expect more out of students, but they support them better. And that's really what it is. It's this notion of you're not trying to make things easier, you're making them harder, and you're supporting students better, providing the support when they need it, how they need it, and where they need it. We've been really happy with that change, and as we're doing the analysis of it after the first full year, our expectation is to really start seeing professional publications from the faculty involved in this showing this is the way to fix this problem.
Discussing improving student success with MSU's Mark Largent on MSU Today. Mark, again, want to have you comment on a couple of phrases I've heard you say. It's not what we teach, it's what they learn, and we want to be known by who we graduate.
Yeah, so let's start with the second one first. So what is a good university? How do you know if a university is good or not? Well, universities measure themselves against one another by the students they refuse to admit. That is, a university is a better university if I'm not able to go to it. If I wasn't able to get admitted to the institution. So I might say things like, well, I couldn't get into Harvard and I couldn't get into University of California, Berkeley, but I did make it into Western Michigan. And implicit in that is a kind of hierarchy of elite status with the schools that are the most selective at the top and the schools that are the least selective at the bottom. So what you get are individual human beings who become the currency for institutions' prestige. The end result of that, effectively, is that students who have more opportunity have more access to more elite institutions, and that gives them even more opportunity. It's part of the cycle that we see where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And as a state university, as a land-grant institution, Michigan State University really finds itself in a problematic situation if it participates in that view. And we have admission standards. Admission is competitive, but we admit a very large number of students. And so our idea is to really not focus on the students who we admit versus those that we don't, but rather to focus on the students that we graduate. And that instead of saying Michigan State University's value and its status is predicated on the students it refuses to admit, we want to say that Michigan State University will be known by the students that it graduates. And what that does for really the first time is aligns our admissions work with our undergraduate student success work, so that when students go from being an applicant to MSU to a student at MSU, there's not this sudden phase shift where I call it the wall of matriculation, where we just admit students and kind of throw them over the wall of matriculation, then there's someone else's responsibility, but to rather really align the work that we're doing when we admit students and we help them think about what they could do at MSU with the work that is happening in the colleges and the departments and with individual faculty members in helping students develop their purposes and their passions. Ultimately, the goal there is to help students leave here stronger and more capable of pursuing whatever it is that ignites them. We have extraordinarily high placement rates. Last year, our placement rate for students either in an occupation that they want to be in or in graduate school or professional school, our percentage was 92%, extraordinarily high. And so this notion that that's the measure that we want, not which students didn't we accept when they were 18, is where we really want to focus. To get us there, it isn't really about what we do and who we are as much as it is what students experience. And so my predecessor introduced me to this phrase, it's not what we teach, it's what they learn. And that shifts the lens from being about us to being about the students. And it's really part of the idea that as a student-focused institution, it is our job to align ourselves with their needs.
Mark, I know we could have an entire conference on this, but before I let you go, I'm just wondering what, for someone who spent their most of their career in higher education, what are the challenges and the opportunities ahead, not only for MSU, but really all of higher education? What is it that you think about when you have a few minutes?
Well, one thing is we see such radical changes in the student numbers relative to prior years. We'd always seen more and more and more and more 18-year-olds graduating from high school and looking for access to higher education. But we see some interesting demographic trends where essentially all of the states above the Mason-Dixon line are seeing a decreasing numbers of high school graduates. That is, the students who are available for colleges and universities to recruit in the north especially are decreasing. And Michigan is most certainly experiencing that as well. The numbers of high school graduates are declining every year from Michigan. So it means that we need to start thinking about where else in the United States and where else in the world we may want to recruit students to come to Michigan State University. Michigan State, University of Michigan, some of the institutions on the west side of the state are able to attract students from Michigan with ease. But what happens is that many of the other institutions in the state don't have as easy of an access to especially students from other countries or from other states. So what we've seen are significant decreases in the sizes of the classes at places like Eastern Michigan or Central Michigan. And that concerns us because as good citizens in the state, we know that the other institutions play a really important role in helping advance people who are looking for college educations, and we don't want to see those institutions flounder. We know that Michigan State has the capacity to recruit students from out of state and internationally, and we've slowly shifted some of the numbers of students who we are recruiting to look at some of the other states. The problem is that the states where students typically come from are also experiencing those declines in higher ed. So ultimately what's happening is that every university is looking at a strategy like this where they look for students in places they hadn't looked at them. What I really like about this is it creates a tremendous opportunity for us. The opportunity is to help students who in the past may not have had access to higher education, or we may not have sought them out in the way that we are now. And so we have this great opportunity to align some of our institutional needs for recruiting students with a social justice aim. That is, we can, if you're speaking like a capitalist, we can expand our market into new consumer bases. Think of it from a social justice point of view. We have a capacity to offer opportunities to students in places that they'd never had that opportunity before. And so much of the work that we're doing around that focuses on places that in the past we really haven't put a lot of attention. So one of them is our neighbor right next door is Lansing and Lansing Community College. We've done a lot of work over the last 9 months to build out a relationship with Lansing Community College. President Knight at LCC has been very supportive of this so that we have a true partnership and that students have more opportunities to think about different pathways into college and then through LCC and MSU. The same thing with some of our pre-college programs with the Lansing School District. And as we build out things like Upward Bound and Talent Search and Gear Up, those are all opportunities for us to extend the opportunities provided by a college education to new groups of people. We continue to be very active in Detroit. Really neat things like Science Gallery going on there and building out relationships with high schools and with other institutions in the Detroit area. Flint is always an important location for us, and we always pay a great deal of attention to the Flint area. So some of these challenges, if they're aligned with some of the other goals that we have, are really great opportunities for us and for future students and ultimately for the state and the nation as a whole.
So, Mark, with this decreasing demographic of college-age kids, we're also seeing record enrollments. How is that working?
Well, Michigan State had last year their record-size incoming class. They had a little over 8,400 students. They were not only record in their size but also record in their student success. Lowest probation rates ever, and the expectation that a record number of them will be returning in a couple of months in the fall. This coming fall, the first time in any college students, the students who are sort of the traditional high school graduates starting at MSU, we expect another record class. Right now we're looking probably around 8,500, maybe 8,600 students. We're well prepared for them. That's not an issue. There's plenty of seats and plenty of beds in the residence halls. But it does tell us that we're doing something right, that the experience that students know are available to them when they show up here in the fall, the opportunities that the institution provides, it's well known among the students. And that's, I think, ultimately, the greatest measure of what we're doing. Graduation rates are important. Probation rates are important. All these different numbers are valuable. But you have got young people voting with their feet and showing that the approaches that we're taking, the opportunities that we're providing, the goals that we have for ourselves and for them are attractive to them, and we're really happy to see them.
So, Mark, as we close, just summarize for those joining in on our conversation, what do you want them to know about the work you're doing to improve student success at MSU?
Well, it's two things. First of all, I want students to know that every single student we admit has the capacity to learn, thrive, and graduate, and that we're making a commitment to students when they make a commitment to Michigan State University that we will provide them the support and the pathways, the community for them to explore their purposes and their passion to be successful as an undergraduate student. And ultimately, we want to be known by the students that we graduate. To enlarge this now, more than 500,000 Spartan graduates worldwide and provide more access and more opportunity to more students than ever before.
And Mark, what's the website for people who want to know more about all you're doing?
undergrad.msu.edu is my office's website. It includes our monthly undergraduate student success newsletter, which has got great news of programs and faculty, staff, and administrators' work, but most importantly, the students' activities so that people can see the kinds of things that go on here. It's a tremendous diversity of experiences and opportunities.
Well, Mark, thanks for telling us about this important work you're doing behind the scenes, and I'm glad to play a small role in letting more people know about it.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
That's Mark Largent. He's Interim Associate Provost for Undergraduate Education and Dean of Undergraduate Studies at Michigan State University. He's also a professor in MSU's James Madison College. And you can keep up with Mark on Twitter at Mark Largent. That's LARGENT @Mark Largent. And I'm Russ White. Thanks for listening to MSU Today.